Hummel joining us now on the live line from Phoenix. It's been about a month since we had you on the program. The latest numbers in from the Arizona Department of Health, nearly 14,900 confirmed cases, just three short of that figure. 747 known deaths as of Wednesday, and that 43 new deaths, Will Hummel, were reported from Tuesday, the single highest number reported in a single day. Are you concerned?
Well, of course, I'll be concerned until there's a vaccine, because, you know, this is a terrible epidemic, and it's having all kinds of bad outcomes, not just deaths like what you just described, and but, you know, people that have lost their jobs. There's a lot of sacrifice going on. So, yeah, I'll be concerned until there's a vaccine in 7 million Arizonans.
Now, the deaths that have been spiking, and they have been spiking, Will, over the last several weeks, it doesn't necessarily mean all of that happened 24 hours ago. I know there's been a lag, sometimes going back even to early April. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, so you got to remember, when you look at the death statistic, that those folks probably got sick at least 2 weeks ago, maybe even 3 weeks ago, because one of the things we know about this illness is that, you know, people have some initial symptoms and then they get worse very quickly. And then, you know, they go to ICUs if it's really bad symptoms, and sometimes they need a ventilator, and those ventilators can save, you know, some of those patients, but some later die. And that whole process can take, you know, a couple to 3 weeks, and then there's a death certificate lag. So, I tend to look at new hospitalizations as the best indicator of where we are in terms of the pathway of this epidemic, you know, over the course of this spring and early summer. Deaths are, of course, a tragic endpoint, but it doesn't tell you as much as new hospitalizations tells you about where we are and what the trend is.
What are you seeing then from those statistics? Share with our listeners what you're seeing when it comes to that hospitalization. What is that showing you?
Yeah, so what we see over the last 3 weeks is a continuous slow, not a big precipitous decline, but a continuous slow decline in the number of new hospitalizations. Those would be new admissions from COVID-19. But remember, you know, we only lifted the stay-at-home order about a week ago, and the incubation period for this virus is about a week. So I expect to see an increase in new hospitalizations in the coming weeks, because there's certainly going to be an increase in transmission of this virus after the stay-at-home order. We hope that it's a modest increase, or I hope there's no increase at all. I expect there to be one. I just hope it's modest, and that would be, if it is modest, it would reflect the fact that most Arizonans, while they know that the stay-at-home order has been lifted for now, that they're still being as safe as they can be, minimizing outdoor exposure, going out in small groups, keeping their distancing, wearing their masks, continuing to wash their hands, and so forth.
Well, a lot of people, it's a big controversy, Will Hummel, about the masks. It's almost become a political statement. There are those that say, I don't need a mask, and then there are the folks that say it does some good. There's all sorts of information out there about, does it do good? What can you tell us about this whole controversy over should you or should you not wear a mask in public?
Okay, so first thing to remember is that when you wear a mask, you're wearing the mask to protect others, not to protect yourself. And so I think that's an important thing to remember. There is some evidence that the mask, a cloth mask even, is effective, because this is a droplet disease, which means small droplets. And you'd be surprised. Here we are talking on this show. I know there's droplets coming out of my mouth right now that I don't know about, and it happens. Yeah. And so a cloth mask can slow that spread. The reason it's important is because there's so much asymptomatic spread of this illness. And so you can't use the I feel fine attitude to drive your decision to wear a mask, because you might feel fine and you might be infected with the virus and spreading it to somebody who's going to have a bad outcome. And so the way I look at it, here's what I use. I use a bandana, just so you know what I use, because I tie it around my neck and it's there all day. And when I go in and out, I don't have to look for my mask. So there's different ways you can do this. It's a minor inconvenience, but it's something that I think is following the golden rule. Do as to others as you would have them do to you. If we all protect each other by wearing our mask, which is not a big deal, then we're all going to be better off. But going back to what you said at the beginning, I think for some reason, and I don't exactly know why, it has become, I think, something of a political statement, I think, is what you mentioned. And I think it's just a sad commentary because I've been lots of places. And I'm wearing my bandana, and I'm in the minority most of the time. Most of the places that I've been, stores and so forth, there's not wearing any masks. I probably answered more questions than you wanted to on the mask thing, but in summary, there is evidence that they're effective. There is a lot of asymptomatic spread with this disease, which is why it's important to wear your mask even if you don't have any kind of symptoms. And it's part of the golden rule. So if you believe in the golden rule, you should be wearing the mask. If you don't, then don't.
And I have a question, Will, for you about the mask. If I wear a mask, and I do, certainly when I go to Safeway or any of the grocery stores, and when I go into a retailer, I do wear a mask, and I do that out of respect for others. But I'm just wondering, am I getting any protection myself by wearing the mask, and then I interface with someone who is not wearing a mask? Could you give me a little bit of enlightenment on that?
So the evidence that I've seen suggests that, like I mentioned, the reason for the mask is you're helping to protect other people more than you are yourself. You may get some protection. The data is a little less clear on whether it protects you yourself, but in a way there is, because there's a side effect, which is when you're wearing the mask to protect yourself, it discourages you to put your fingers in your mouth and touch your face because you got a mask on. And so that's a side benefit of wearing a mask that you might not think about. But going back to the original thing, it's really a courtesy thing that is, as I mentioned, a simple courtesy to help spread, help slow the spread to others more than it is to protect yourself.
I sent you that a copy of this story that's getting a lot of publicity today. It's a Vanity Fair magazine story. And I know you haven't had a chance to kind of vet the study, but it says if 80% of Americans wore masks, COVID-19 infections would plummet worldwide. Your thoughts?
Well, I did go to the article, but I read the Vanity Fair article that you sent me, but I wasn't able to find the study with which the Vanity Fair article is referring to. But to me, I'm just going to tell you, it didn't look to me like it's an actual study. It looks to me like it's an academic model, I'm just telling you, when I made public policy, when I was at the health department, I liked peer-reviewed journal articles that were vetted and reviewed, and the statistics were evaluated, and others more talented than me were taking a look and validating. It didn't look to me like that's what this study is. And I just am careful about drawing conclusions about things, even when I agree with something. Like, for example, I think it's a good idea that people should wear masks. That doesn't mean that I agree that you should reinforce studies that haven't been vetted in order to support your position. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
It's important to stay with the evidence when you make recommendations, especially when you're in a policymaking role like I used to be. What you sent me didn't look like strong evidence, although I support the objective, which is to get more people to wear masks. But it's kind of an unclear message. But I'm a data-driven guy. And so anyway, I was a little skeptical, but I will withhold judgment until I see the actual model.
Will Hummel is with us. Will's been with us through this whole crisis. We've had hope to get him on pretty much every month as things go along here. He is the Director of Marketing and Public Relations and Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. He is the former Director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. All right, Will, I want to talk about modelers. What are the latest models showing for when Arizona is going to peak?
Yeah, so the answer to that question lies in how people behave. So what the modeling team, which is about 20 researchers, some from U of A down there in Tucson and some up at ASU in the Biodesign Institute, are really developing the latest and greatest models using Arizona-specific data. And what they do is they take where we are today and look at the data and put it into a best-fit algorithm for where we are. And then what they do is they have various projections and say, now, we've now lifted the stay-at-home order. If that increases transmission of the virus by 10%, and this is what we can expect to see with the epidemic over the next 2 months. If it increases transmission of the virus 30%, for example, then this is what we'll see. And so if you go to the ASU Biodesign website, you can look at that model. And it's an academic model, just so you know. So it's about 26 pages and pretty dense. But it's I think if you spend enough time on it, any layman could understand the results. But essentially, it's a decision-making tool to help policymakers, for example, the governor, the health director, et cetera, to, as real-time data comes in, look at that graph and make a decision about where it looks like the transmission is going, and it allows them to then forecast 2 to 3 weeks ahead so that if it turns out to be, for example, that lifting the stay-at-home order is going to increase transmission of the virus 30%, then it shows you that we have a big spike. If that actually happens, then we're going to have a big spike in hospitalizations in July. We hope that doesn't happen, that people behave responsibly, and that transmission of the virus only increases, say, 10%. And if that happens, then you see, while the virus still is in Arizona and it's not going to be gone like we talked about until there's a vaccine, we don't see a big spike in hospitalizations. And so that's the value of these models. It helps policymakers look 2 to 3 weeks ahead using current data and helps them to, if they need to do another stay-at-home order. If, let's say, it turns out that it looks like it's 30% increase in transmission, it might be that the governor then decides to use the model and say, hey, do another couple-week lockdown in order to tamp this down so that we can save some lives and keep our hospital capacity.
Now, to the most famous modeler in the world. His name is Neil Ferguson of the Imperial College in London. His information, his model, in March basically shut down planet Earth. And today, the Telegraph newspaper in London reports that the model could be, was this a devastating mistake? And there are some people who think it was. Your thoughts?
So I'll just be honest with you, Bill, and I said this in the email. When I read that at the very beginning, at least 2 months ago when the Imperial College model came out, to me, I just saying, it looked to me like an advocacy piece more than research. That was my first impression. And I got that impression by the way the researcher was talking, the people from Imperial College, the kind of language that they were using, the level of certainty that they implied as they discussed their results made me believe that it was really an advocacy piece more than it was science. So that was my first impression, and it appears as though there's some growing critical mass growing critical mass in that direction for some time now. But let's take a step back, which goes to part of the question, which how much damage was done by that report. And I don't think we know the answer to that question yet, because if you have to look at the politics in the UK at the time, and at the time, you know, Johnson's government, you know, the majority party there in the UK was extremely skeptical about whether COVID-19 was serious or not. And there was real reluctance to really basically do anything. If you remember, you know, Spain was and even northern Italy were going gangbusters, and the UK was lackadaisical at the point. So I think the Imperial College model captured enough attention in the leadership party there in the UK that, you know, put together the motivation to do essentially whatever the U.S. I don't know what they called it there, but essentially their stay at home order, which was a good policy decision. The damage that was done is that the credibility of the science and to the value of modeling was done. And as I mentioned, modeling isn't there to say, predict and say this is exactly what's going to happen. It's a valuable tool to help decision makers evaluate different options and look forward, say, 3 weeks and make decisions today to impact so that they don't end up with really bad outcomes that the model would have forecasted using current data. So it's a complicated answer, I think. It did damage to science. Whether it did damage overall is, I think, an outstanding question.
It is, and I'm glad you clarified that. It's an advisory tool. That's what a model is. Getting back to Ferguson, and I think the knock on him in this Telegraph piece out of London today is, why in the world didn't folks get a second opinion? That it would have seemed prudent, and then maybe blend the two models. But I suppose you were still going to get the advice to pretty much shut things down, right, Will Hummel?
Well, I think in the end, the policy decision would have been the same. But yeah. You ask an interesting question, I think the answer. I'll speculate for a minute.
Okay.
Number one, when it comes to stuff like this, if you're Johnny on the spot, you're the one who gets the attention.
Yeah.
And so Imperial College is like, oh, there's a pandemic. Let's run a model. And in my view, it was more advocacy than a model. And that we could get famous and people will pay attention to us. And and because you're first, you get all the attention. So I think that was part of it. And I also, I don't know this for a fact, but most of the time when people have that kind of influence, there's also relationships that exist where there could be some members in Parliament, for example, that knew him or worked with him earlier in their career or in some way know him and were giving him some street cred within Parliament. So I don't know that. I'm totally speculating on that part. But the first part, I'm probably not speculating. If you're Johnny on the spot and you're quick, you'll get the attention. And that's not always a good thing.
All right. And I have less than 2 minutes. And this is really an important question about heat here in Arizona. Any indication that heat is slowing down COVID?
So we don't know yet. And that's and by the way, if you look at that model we talked about, the ASU and U of O folks put together, that's one of the great uncertainties in that latest development in their model, which was posted on the website a couple of days ago, is they are not modeling a seasonal effect in. If there is a seasonal effect, and there might be, it would really end up slowing the transmission. And so even though the lockdown order, the stay-at-home order is lifted, if the big heat that we have in Arizona has an impact on this virus, and it might, we could end up seeing an actual decrease in the transmission of the virus and a slowing of in the spread of COVID-19. Let's hope that that happens. There's not any clear evidence that that's the case, but there might be. I mean, you know, I know we only have a few seconds left, but, you know, one of the things that gives me pause is that in Ecuador, which is right on the equator, there was a city at sea level.
City is Guayaquil, right on the coast. Yeah.
Yeah. They had a really bad, very hot, very humid, very bad outbreak. That gives me pause to think that the summer's going to help us.
All right. Will Hummel, always a pleasure. Thank you, Will. Have a great day.
Take care. Anytime.